Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writer's Book Club.
This podcast is brought to you by Camille DeMaio. Camille is the author of best-selling novel The Memory of Us. Set in World War II England, The Memory of Us follows the story of Julianne, a Protestant socialite, and Kyle, a Catholic seminarian, and the love that grows among prejudice, family tradition, and culture. But when a wartime tragedy creates a devastating rift between them, Julianne is forced to make choices about who she loves and who she'll become. Named a must-read by Redbook Magazine, Coastal Living, BuzzFeed, Pop Sugar, and many more, don't miss The Memory of Us, available on Amazon.
Today we welcome Melody Robinette to the program. She's an Amazon best-selling author who writes young adult, new adult, but also ventures into a variety of other genres. She's best known for the Underground series, an adult paranormal fantasy series. Melody is an English teacher and enjoys summers to catch up on her writing. Welcome, Melody.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the program. So, you have written 9 books. Tell us about your Amazon best-selling status. How do you do that? Do you have like a strategy for attaining that? Or is this just, yay, I did it, and then you're not quite sure?
No, I know exactly what happened.
Oh, good. Tell us.
It only lasted for a few months, but I got up to the top, so I'm able to claim that.
Yeah.
Just like, if you're a New York Times bestseller, just for one day, you can still say that you're a New York Times bestseller.
Yep, yep.
So on Amazon, I did the free book promotion with my second novel. Whenever I put it out, I put the first book for free. And that was the first time I'd ever done it. It was my second. Like, I'd only had 2 books out at that time. And so I published Ash, the second book in the Underground series. And I made Oaken free. And the first day I had like 2,300 downloads.
Wow.
Of Oaken. And then the second day was a little bit more. And the third day was about the same. And that like shot my book up into the top 100 free list. And then whenever it came down off of the free promotion, it stayed up there for a while as just a regular book.
Yay.
Like as a, you know.
Yeah, paid.
They paid for a book.
So and was it your free one that became an Amazon bestseller, or was it your second book?
It was my free one, my first one that I set
for free
that went to the top and then stayed there whenever it switched over to paid.
So wow, that's great.
That is good.
Yeah.
And then so you
got up there, but it wasn't the top one.
Did you find that it was good for sales for the second book doing it that way? I've heard of people doing this before, and
yeah.
I just always wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, I had tons of sales. It was incredible. I was like flabbergasted for a few months. Whenever my
wow.
came, I was like, what? This is incredible.
That's a great.
I can quit my job, but then it stopped.
You just need a new book every month. You'll be good to go.
Well, and the sad thing is I did that exact same strategy when my third book came out and it didn't go the same. So
interesting.
That is not. It's not a magical way of doing things. I don't know what happened.
Well, you know, I wonder too, like, is it because Amazon has changed? There's so many things, you know, strategies that we've all been like told for a year now is the best thing to do. Like Amazon is shifting and changing. The people using it are different and changing and using different
right.
strategies. So it's hard to know. Is it just that particular book? Was it because it was the third one? Is it because Amazon is completely different? How do you know? That's
yeah.
what's hard.
And you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
there's no way to know. Amazon's really quiet about that. So, yeah, it's
interesting. I think the most important thing here is that you've got a readership. So, you know, okay, so the third book didn't do as well as the second or the first, but all those people that read the first and the second were ready to read the third one. You're building that readership, which I think
yeah.
is great.
That's true.
Right, that's true.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't know as much about marketing when I put out my first few books, so I didn't have a newsletter. I didn't have any way for those readers to continue following me other than my website, but I didn't have a newsletter or anything like that. So if I were to go back and do it again, I would have set up all of that stuff. I would have formatted my books myself so I could have control of the bylinks in the back and the anything that's changed or needs to be edited. I would be able to have that, which is what I'm doing right now, is why I'm re-editing those books so I can reformat them.
What did you do the last time? Did you pay someone to do the formatting?
Yeah, I paid somebody to format them because I didn't know anything about that stuff. And I was so eager to put them out there that I was like, I'll just pay for someone to do it. And I mean, it worked out. They aren't formatted correctly and they're nice looking, but I don't have any control over them at this point. So that's why right now I'm going back and re-editing the books that I've already published so I can reformat them.
Ah, see, that's a really good tip for people, because I have people ask me all the time, you know, what about formatting? I need to go hire someone. That's why I want a publisher, all those things. But you really are, each piece you let someone else do for you, you're taking away the control that you have. If you have that file, you can fix something the day you get someone tells you there's a typo, you can fix it, upload it, and be done with it. So,
and as someone who's crazy about grammar, I hate getting those emails like, just so you know, this was spelled wrong or this was wrong. And I was like, oh, I can't do anything about it right now.
Yeah, that's frustrating. So, but now you have control. So you're redoing the formatting for the previous ones and having that file yourself so you can upload it. That's good.
And the great thing also about that is you can actually add links in there and keep updating links. You know, if you have a new book coming out, you can say, read the first chapter for free or whatever. You can do that. You can go back in 5 minutes. You've added a new link for people to do that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the main reasons why I wanted to do that and to add my newsletter and everything like that.
Oh, that's smart. So you put that in the – where do you put all that? Is that the front of the book or the back of the book?
I only do it twice, but I put it at the front of the book, like sign up for my newsletter. And what I'm planning to do is I just finished writing a novella prequel to the Underground series that I'm going to be making permanently free on Amazon, tricking them into letting me do that.
Shh, Amazon, don't listen.
Amazon, don't listen.
They don't care. I'm going to make that free, but I'm also going to offer it along with Oaken free if they sign up for my newsletter.
Oh, see, this is a great strategy.
You may want to also think about doing the Facebook ad as well. I've been learning that Facebook ads for signing up for newsletters is very successful.
Really?
That's next on my list. Matt Dawson, I think is his name.
Mark Dawson. I've been following his course. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's on my list to go. Okay.
Who's Matt Dawson? Clue us in.
Mark Dawson. He's a guy that's making a lot of money right now teaching people about Facebook ads. He's making a lot of money out of his Facebook ads.
He's probably got a Facebook ad.
He has 100 people sign up a day on his newsletter.
Get out. All right. I don't have a newsletter, and B, I don't have a Facebook ad promoting it, so I think I need to do those two things.
You got nothing else to do, Cage.
I got nothing else going on. That's the thing. That's why I haven't started a newsletter. I'm like, then I have to, like, update it. Nah, I just
don't. That's it.
Well, I haven't even sent anything out on my newsletter because I haven't had any news.
Well, see, okay. That makes me feel better.
I've done nothing for the last year. I just sat in.
Well, I just got it.
Yeah, but you know what? The things that you're telling us, that you have a prequel coming out that will be free, I mean, all these things are great to put in there when you're ready, you know? So yeah, I could do a newsletter and just let it sit there too. That doesn't sound as stressful.
I just want to spam people because I get really annoyed whenever I get email after email every day from the same person.
With nothing to say. Yeah.
We actually send out a newsletter once a month. And one of the things we do is we'll actually talk about other books that are available. So if you haven't got news about you, you can even promote other authors in there that are like you, because it comes back. It's come up like karma, you know. It's like, so there's lots of other things you can talk about in your newsletter that will be interesting to your audience, that will keep them reading the newsletter. So when there's something that you want to, when you're launching, they're already connected. They listen, they read it every month, you know.
Yeah,
right.
Good point.
Yeah.
All right. So we need to know about the Pomodoro method. We saw, I think, on your website that that is what you use to write. Tell people what that is and why you use it.
I'm obsessed with that now. That's awesome. I like, seriously, anyone who's a writer, I'm like, oh my gosh, have you tried the Pomodoro method? And they look at me strangely. But, and it's called the Pomodoro method because, you know, those old kitchen timers in the shape of a tomato?
Yeah.
That's why it's called that.
Oh, that's hilarious.
The Pomodoro. So basically, it's not just for writing, but, you know, this is all we care about. So you set your timer, and there's even an app on your iPhone that you can download that has this specific timer and break and everything built into it. But you set your timer for 25 minutes, and you are literally not allowed to do anything but write. You can't check your phone. You can't get up. You can't go warm up your coffee. Like, you can't do anything for 25 minutes other than write. And you do that straight through. So you get a 5-minute break, and you have to force yourself to take that break, like look away from the screen, get up, heat up your coffee, whatever. And when that 5 minutes is over, you sit back down, and you do that as many times as it takes until you get the word count you want.
Uh-huh.
So when I was writing, I'm a teacher, so I have to get up early to write. I wake up at like 5 o'clock. To write for about an hour and a half. And before, I was maybe hitting 1,000 words if I was lucky, because I would get stuck on Facebook or on Pinterest or any social media, anything but writing. I would like write 2 sentences and then, well, I don't know what I'm going to write next, so I'm going to go check Facebook. And then I'd be on there for 30 minutes. And it was just a mess. And then when I started the Pomodoro method, I have been getting up to over 2,000 words in an hour and a half, and that's with 15-minute breaks.
So you doubled your productivity. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And it's so simple.
It is. But, I mean, I think it's that you're forcing yourself. And the bad thing is, if you aren't OCD about timers, you can just pause it and do other things. Don't let yourself do that.
Don't give them the cheat hack. Come on. Because you know we're all going
to
do
that. I've actually used it too. I use it screenwriting when I'm screenwriting because that's more easier for me to do. And oh my gosh, it really does work because you keep looking at the timer and you go, I've just got another 5 minutes. So I've got another. So it's like you're, and then you get that break and then you're like, okay, now I have to take a break. You know, it's like it really does focus you on the writing. It's really fun to do. I've done it. Yeah.
I have to write today. That is exact. I'm going to try this because I kind of do it myself. I get down there. I have my little writing cave and I get down there and it's like, I have distracted by 1200 things. And then I'm just like, enough, get to work. It's like my mom comes out and points at the computer and then I do it, but I don't have like any structure like this. I think this is really good for me.
Yeah. And I'm a very disorganized person. So the more organization I can bring into my life, the better.
Yeah, see, that's me too. You should see the room that I'm writing in. My writing cave is beautiful. The way I face the wall. Everything behind me are kids' toys, and there's a couch with holes. You know, it's just like this chaos room, but I have my little corner. As long as I face forward, I'm good.
Good in life. As long as you face forward, then the crap behind you won't notice.
That's exactly true.
That should be like a quote.
That should be. We need to do a meme for that, Suzanne. Inspirational meme. I should post a picture of what's behind me in that room for the meme too.
And look at the crap behind you. Keep moving forward.
All right. Somewhere we saw, I think it was your website, that you wrote some of your first book in longhand, and now you've upgraded to the complicated and amazing Scrivener. Tell us the difference in terms of your mental writing process and how you've improved or whatever using your new technology.
Yeah, gosh, I don't know why I did that. Someone gave me a journal, I think. I was talking to my friend about wanting to start writing again, and when my birthday came around, she gave me this journal and said, here, you need to start your novel again. And it was a great gesture, so I started writing in the journal she gave me. They're almost impossible to edit. You can't edit yourself. It's ridiculous. And then you don't remember what you said a couple pages back, so you have to go and you can't, you know, do the control whatever find option in your journal. So you have to go flip through the pages until you find it. And that took me like a year and a half. I was doing that. I have 3 filled journals of that. And I don't know what my epiphany was, but I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm never going to finish. So I put all of that into my computer, edited as I went, and wrote the rest of it in. I did Word for a while. Scrivener is a really recent thing, actually. But that automatic, like, I'm a very fast typer, so I was sort of in awe at how fast I could finish a chapter as opposed to writing it longhand.
Yeah. Now, how have you found Scrivener? I've tried it a couple times, and I love the concept. I just don't have the time to...
I only do the bare minimum of Scrivener. I organize it on the side. You know, you can do little folders, and this is sort of a separate conversation, but I'm a big-time plotter. I plot my novels. That's what I do. And there's a certain method I use to plot them called the three-act plot structure.
Yep.
And I do that on the left side of Scrivener. So it's broken up into sequences. So every sequence is separate in its own folder, and then I have each chapter underneath that. So it's super organized, which, like I said, I'm not an organized person,
yeah,
but for some reason,
that works.
Scrivener helps me with that. You can put your characters in there and pictures of them and any research you may be doing about it right in the exact same document, so you don't have to click away all the time to different folders or different screens. So, yeah, I love Scrivener. I don't think I could go back to anything.
Every time I talk to someone, I'm like, that's it. I'm just going to do it. And then I don't. But maybe when I'm done with this book and I have the freedom, I have a good portion of my next book already written but not organized in any way. So maybe that's what I just need to do. I'm going to do your writing method and your Scrivener method. I'm going to copy you.
It's going to be a little Melody.
I'm going to be a little Melody.
So, Melody, tell us about your social media strategy.
I wouldn't call it a strategy.
Presence, then. Tell us about your presence on social media.
I am still desperately trying to learn social media. I'm most comfortable with Instagram. I seem to get the most followers and likes on things on Instagram. I don't know why. I frequently do, like, challenges. This past month in June, I did a Am Writing challenge with the hashtag Am Writing.
Right.
And, like, every day it would have you take a different picture. So one would be take a picture of what you drink in the morning, and another one's like your author costume, and just a bunch of different stuff like that. And I got several new followers from that. But then, like, Facebook groups, my Facebook page is just sort of just sitting there. I don't know how to drag people into it. I'll have to look into the Mark Dawson thing for that. And then Twitter, I still don't understand.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand how people get Twitter followers other than following other people.
What?
So that's all I've been doing.
Right.
And they do follow me back, but I don't know that they read anything I say. So, like I said, it's not a strategy. I'm definitely not one to follow in that regard.
Right.
Yeah. Your Facebook page, is it an author page?
I do have an author page on there, and it looks like I have tons of, this is a terrible secret, I probably shouldn't tell y'all.
We can delete it.
We want to know.
Tell us, and if you really
look like I'm more popular than I am. But I'm a member on several different author groups, and at one point in time, everyone was sharing each other's pages, and everyone was liking each other's pages. So it was just tons and tons of authors, mostly self-published, who were sharing their pages to get more likes. So it looks more legit.
Well, you know what? That, I don't think there's anything wrong about that. I mean, I do that all the time with other authors, and authors read. it's not even though it is people that you are, like, connecting with, you know, I get a lot of authors that go read my book. So I think that's a good strategy. I think it's very smart.
Well, and authors, authors have readers. So if they're sharing any of your material as well as just liking your page, then their readers are looking at your work as well. So
And I think you have to get a few in there just to look legitimate. You know, you want to get 200 or 300 to look like you know, four people, but you were all a bit suspect, you know? It's like, is this a spammy person? So I think that's a really smart strategy. Yeah. You do have a strategy, and you didn't even know it.
Didn't even know.
I guess so.
That's a great idea. I did that not long ago with Goodreads. We did a whole bunch of following each other's pages, Facebook, and blah, blah, blah. It's good. It's helpful, you know?
Yeah. It is.
An injection of 100 people that all of a sudden is great.
The whole point you said about Instagram with your young adult market and YA, those are the people that are on Instagram. So I think that's a really good strategy to continue that. And Instagram, there is a way to post what you put on Instagram onto your Facebook page. So after you...
Well, I don't know how to do... Oh, well, I can put it on my Facebook page, but I don't know how to connect it to my author Facebook page. Because it's different.
Well, then you take it from your regular page and you share it to your author page, but it's annoying. I know, Jim. Yeah.
I have to think to do that.
Yeah. But
I wish I did do that more, but yeah, I share it to my Twitter and to Facebook and what's that other place? Oh, Tumblr that I don't understand either.
Suzanne has a Tumblr for us. I don't understand it either.
I don't really understand it either. I just share stuff on it. I don't know.
I feel like I'm a sad example of my generation. I'm supposed to know about all of these things, and I don't.
You know, the thing is, though, it's changing so much that it doesn't matter who you are. You constantly have to be on top of it. So I don't think you're any different than a lot of people trying to figure that stuff out, you know?
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, and I think that everyone has their favorite platforms. What is it about Twitter that you find confusing? Is it just the medium, or what is it that you find hard about?
Well, I don't understand how people get followers or likes on there without using a bunch of hashtags. That's how I get people on Instagram. It's because you use all of these specific hashtags, and if people go search in that hashtag, then they find you because they're searching for similar things to that. Like am writing, they'll go look in that specific hashtag, or am reading, they'll go look at that too.
Mm-hmm. And that's the same on Twitter. You know, am reading and am writing is on there too. Have you tried it over there?
I did a couple times. It didn't seem to do any extra.
Right.
Okay. The only way I'm seeing people following me is if I follow them first, or if I follow similar people to who they're following.
And that is kind of the way that we all start out following, is that way. And if you retweet people, they follow you. If you retweet me, I'll refollow you always. You know, as long as you've not got a real scary site, then you're not, you know. But if it's just a normal, just somebody who's retweeted me, I always go check their site and follow them straight back. So that's another thing to do, is to retweet a few authors as well. That'll get you following.
Yeah, I haven't thought of that.
Yeah, and the other thing that Suzanne kind of created this little system when she promoted her last book on Twitter, where you put your own content out, here's my book, here's my blog, whatever. And then in between that, you put in good content that your readers want. So if it's YA, you think about what those kids are doing for the summer and just things that are more reader friendly, so that they're like, you get a lot of people through that because they're interested in whatever that topic is. And those are the people you want to connect with because they're your readers. Maybe think of
it. All just takes time. Yeah. So if you're not really connected, if you're not feeling it, and Instagram seems to be working great for you. And I didn't know that about hashtags and Instagram, so I just learned that for the first time. That's how. I mean, I know about hashtags. I just didn't realize how successful it can be on Instagram. That's great to know.
Yeah.
If you go to a popular page or whatever, anything, and you go to the very top comment, it's usually them, and they'll put several dots to keep it from looking bad, but you will do a dot and then you enter and then a dot and enter, and then you put all your hashtags so it doesn't look as bad as having a bunch of hashtags underneath whatever you're commenting on. Usually I'll say my little caption and then put a comment in addition to the caption underneath the picture, so all the hashtags are in there, but no one can see it at the very top, so it doesn't look bad.
Uh-huh. Ah, so it filters down. You mean the hashtags kind of filter down, so that when they pull that up on their phone, it just has the quote.
Yeah, so it doesn't look like, wow.
Oh, that's really good advice.
And I copy paste it. I do not do that every time. Like, I have a document in my phone that I just go copy and paste into the comment.
Your hashtags? If they're popular hashtags, if you type in hashtag and then the first two letters, it gives you a whole bunch of things that have been used either by you. I think it's based on your account, what you've already used, and you can just click on it and it'll insert it.
Yeah, that works too.
You can also do a search. I don't know if you guys know that, to get in the hashtags and see what's very popular within the genre that you're looking at. And they will actually, then you can just use those, which is great too.
That's a good way to broaden your reach too. Yeah.
So how many people do you have on Instagram, Melody? This is very interesting for me because I do use Instagram, but not like you. And so I'm learning a lot myself, and I'm sure listeners are as well.
Yeah.
So
no, I only have 525 followers right now. I got most of them this year from doing the hashtags and the June challenge and all that. So
that's really cool. So are you going to try and do a challenge regularly? Is that what you're going to try and do? Or
if I see one, if there's a writing challenge, I've seen a couple of book challenges that I may try to participate in because those seem to have a lot of followers as well.
And where do you find those challenges?
I just look at other people's accounts, other authors or other people who are known for their books. Like they post pictures of young adult books or fantasy books or something like that.
Oh, this is really great. Yeah. And so I love the idea of putting the dots in and letting that filter down. That's wonderful. So kind of switching heads a little bit now, you write for YA. What would you say are the pros and cons for writing for YA? It's a very popular market right now, and I just wondered how you tackle that and whether you find that, rather than writing for other genres, why you kind of pick YA?
Like I said, I'm sort of moving towards a more mature writing style at the time, but I am still working on some YA projects, and I guess if you want your book to be more widespread for all ages, and I'm a teacher, so I have my students asking about my books, and I don't want it to be just like, oh, well, you can't read that because it's not really appropriate. So I do have my trilogies appropriate, Dream Snatchers is appropriate, and a couple of the other books I'm working on are for all ages. And I'm the oldest on both sides of my family, so I have all these cousins that want to read the books and siblings. I'm a teacher, and I teach middle school. So my students are all younger, obviously. And it's better, I find, to have books that are appropriate for all ages rather than just the adult content. So that's the pros of young adults, but the cons, I'm kind of a potty mouth sometimes, and I really like for my characters to curse because I feel like it's natural.
Yeah.
And I hate that I have to screen that in my young adult books.
Right.
And, you know, there's some adult situations, you know, that I like to put my characters in sometimes that young adults, they're not supposed to. They're not supposed to.
Yeah, you don't want those in your YA books. Can you tell us about the Underground series? And then you also have a standalone called Dream Snatchers.
The Underground series is the first set of books that I've ever written. I started writing when I was 15 years old.
Wow.
And so I would say that my Underground series is the youngest feeling of all of my books because I was so young when I wrote them.
Yeah.
And it's a young adult trilogy, mostly fantasy, I would say maybe paranormal. I would say urban fantasy if it took place in a city, but it doesn't. So it's kind of
Sounds interesting that there's a lot of mixed genres now, and that makes them very unique.
Yeah, it has the feeling of an urban fantasy without the city part. They live in a tree city. Like there are trees everywhere that they live in.
That's like
the size of Redwoods.
Exact opposite of urban, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a city, but it's made of trees anyway.
That's cool. That's cool, though. Very good, creative.
Yeah, it's about these twins who discover that they are actually elves and they're royalty. And there's this evil elf woman named Vyra who's trying to do away with their entire bloodline. And they travel into this underground world called the Underground, funnily enough, which is just where all the magical creatures in the world have come to live after not wanting to deal with the humans anymore because, you know, we're kind of terrible.
We kind of are, especially nowadays.
Yeah, right? They're lucky to be down there. But it's just about the twins' journey and them growing from sort of immature teenagers into leaders of this elf world.
Ah, that's cool.
Sounds great.
It does. It sounds really interesting.
Dream Snatchers is about a girl whose father has sort of squashed all of her artistic dreams. She's this painter, and she's the biggest dreamer, and she thinks about things in ways people don't anymore. And it turns out that there's this band of people called Dream Snatchers who are sorcerers who go around stealing people's dreams. Mm-hmm. And she has to go after them and try to win their trust and get them to stop what they're doing.
Ah, that's pretty creative. Is that a young adult one or teen?
Yeah, that's also young adult.
Yeah.
I was 23 when I wrote that.
Yeah, so you're right in the, a lot of people I know write for that genre, but they're in their 40s. So you have a much better voice probably, at least in terms of giving this message to them because you're in that same age.
Can you give us a little bit about what you're working on right now?
Earlier in the summer, I just finished this duology that I'm obsessed with. It's about basically a Grim Reaper who is assigned to kill his best friend, his old best friend. And, well, they're enemies now. And then he goes to follow him and reap his soul and everything. And then he starts to fall in love with him. So it's actually, I guess you would call it an LGBT book.
Wow.
Right.
That's very unique. Very
what unique. A unique premise.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with it. I just read Rainbow Rowell's book, Carry On, which it has two guys as the main characters, love interest. And that's, I think, what gave me the inspiration to make those two characters gay. Because I'd had the idea about a Grim Reaper falling for the person he was supposed to kill. So I had originally made it a girl, and I wasn't really passionate about the idea. It just sort of sat in my brain. And then when I read Carry On, I was like, oh my gosh, it could be a guy, and it's going to be amazing. And it was. Like, I love that book.
Wow, where is that in the process right now? Is it written?
Yeah, both of the books. It's a duology, and actually it was going to be a standalone, but I sent every chapter to my mom. She's my first beta reader, and she was like, you have to write another book. You can't just not have these characters anymore. She was obsessed with it too.
Yeah, that's great.
And I was like, I really don't know what else I would do with these characters. And she said, well, you have to figure something out because you can't just not continue with them. I love them too much.
So I was wow, like, that's good. That's good that somebody, you know, is really connected to them like that. I love that.
But this one, she was getting frustrated with me if I wouldn't send her a chapter as soon as she wanted it or
awesome.
Whatever. So she was the reason I wrote the second book. And I'd never written a duology before. I only thought in like single or triple. I never thought of two books being a complete series. But there are several popular books out there that just have two books. So I decided to do it too.
Yeah, why not?
Fabulous.
That's cool.
So, do we want to move on to a lightning round? Are you ready for a lightning round, Miss KJ?
Yeah, I think we're good to go. What about you, Melody? Yeah. You ready for that?
I'm
nervous about lightning rounds.
Oh, yeah. We'll help you. So, what is your favorite band or artist?
Taylor Swift.
Oh
really? Cool.
T-Swizzle.
I love her. I've seen all of her concerts that last, like, four of them.
Oh, my gosh. So, you really are a fan. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you prefer left coast or right coast?
Left.
Left. West coast. Do you live that way? Where are you actually in the country?
No. Oh, I live in Texas.
I say, but you like left coast. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite writing spot?
Coffee shop.
Okay, cool. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
Plotter.
If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
Oh, I don't want to go back in time very much.
That is so awesome. I love that.
How about to the first novel where you could then put the newsletter in place?
Right. Okay, yes. Okay. Just earlier this year. Earlier last year. No, actually, let's be honest. Okay. I have several health conditions that I wish I had known about, so I would go back to before that so I could tell myself, like, hey, you need to get this checked out or whatever.
There you go.
So, real talk here.
That's good.
Yeah, no, sounds good. If you had a superpower, where would you want to be?
What would you want
hair?
It to be?
Oh, wow.
Oh, sorry. Let me ask that again.
I want it in my arm.
Okay, now I'm going to read the question that's actually on the paper. If you had a superpower, what would you want it to be?
I would want to fly.
Ooh, why?
Because I hate airplanes. They make me nervous. Like, I can't stand airplanes, so I would like to fly places instead of get on an airplane.
Wow, okay.
That's good.
Who or what inspires you?
My family, I would say, inspires me. They're extremely supportive. My husband, especially my mom. Yeah, they inspire me.
Cool. Which book do you wish you had written?
Harry Potter.
Smart.
Is that for the money, the fame, or the book?
All of it. All of it.
Okay. What is your favorite writing author moment so far? Writing or author moment so far?
I think it was when I first published Oaken, just going from a writer wannabe to an actual published author, having that sort of epiphany that I could do it myself. I didn't need a publishing house to do it for me. It was sort of empowering.
Yeah. And that Oaken was your first book? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oaken was my first.
Fabulous. One thing you wish you'd been told about being a writer?
I wish they would have told me that I could do it by myself, because I went for several years thinking that I needed other people's approval, agent, publishers, all of that, and sort of having to struggle with not feeling good enough when I would get those rejection letters. I wish I had known from the beginning that I could do it myself.
Wow.
That's good.
Amazing. Don't you love that we are empowered now to do that? If we want to produce something, we can. And we've got an audience. It's amazing.
I love it.
Yeah. I think you're going to do great over the next few years, Melody, as you grow your audience. I think it's going to be fabulous for you. And that's all I've got for you as far as questions go.
Cool. That wasn't so bad.
Yeah. No, see? You were scared for nothing.
You survived. We need to give her that T-shirt. You survived the lightning round.
That's right.
I know.
Well, good. This has been a lot of fun.
I know. I liked it.
Yeah. So, Melody, we're so glad we had you. Thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
We really enjoyed it.
Please join us next week where we welcome Gisela Hausman. She is a email evangelist and one of the top reviewers on Amazon with some great advice.
You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEAND. VRIT.com.